Hey everyone, this is Al Nichols with the Straight Popcorn Podcast. Brock and I, were incredibly tired. You may even hear a little bit of my voice. I'm exhausted. He definitely is exhausted. Even though it's been, you know, we're only at the middle of the week, it feels like we've been living this week like Bill Murray in Groundhog's Day, just over and over and over again. With that said, we're doing good. Everything's fine. We just didn't have the energy or the time to sit down this Wednesday evening that I'm recording this for the Thursday podcast this week. Guys, we will be back next week. Brock and I are going to be sitting down actually Saturday to record a brand new episode, and we look forward to going ahead and releasing that. We got so many new things to talk about. Just off the top of my head, you know, the brand new X-Men trailer for Days of Future Past. Also, there's a 1 minute opening clip of the film that I think you guys should check out. Captain America's new costume for Avengers 2, which, in my opinion, is astonishing. It really is awesome. Hated the Avengers costume, and I'll talk more about that on the next episode. But there's other things as well. A lot of cool news we will get into as soon as humanly possible. We'll probably do a few posts, though, on our Straight Popcorn page just to kind of hint at what we're going to be talking about coming up next week. But anyway, guys, tonight we thought we would show you, or not show you, you're not going to be seeing this, but we're going to be playing for you a little thing that Brock and I tried to sit down and do before. Now, we talked about it last episode about doing a film called Food Fight, which was part of our little segment idea of doing a Stray Popcorn afternoon movie. Every time there was like a slow news week, we'd pull out an old movie or something interesting and we'll sit down and do a commentary track and then let that be that. We sat down to do Food Fight, and that was a disaster. That was horrible. That was like the worst thing that I've ever had my eyes endure before. Feels still kind of gross even knowing that I watched that film. But before that, we actually sat down and tried to do the same thing before without doing like a commentary style. We tried to sit down and just, we watched the films in advance and then we sat down and talked about them. Was that a mistake? Not entirely positive, but, you know, it didn't make for the best episode, but it wasn't that these were necessarily bad. These were actually bootstrapped to the end of our regular podcast, and these things go on for about another hour, and we were like, you know, let's just cut this off. We'll save this for another, you know, day or something like that. I'm sure there'll be a day coming up here in the not-too-distant future where we'll just be too tired or exhausted, and, you know, but we can't actually sit down and record one, or we're just going to miss a day because of a vacation or something. Well, guys, that day is today. We are going ahead and expunging any back catalog of things that we have to show you, excluding the Food Fight thing. That will probably never see the light of day. That was so bad. But anyway, this one is actually, I think, going to be kind of cool, guys, so please enjoy. This is the first time we're going to do this, the Stray Popcorn afternoon movie. It even has its own, like, little opening jingle, which you're going to hear in a minute. But we did two films. We did, what was the films? We did Food Fight, which is one of Brock's all-time favorite childhood films, which is about... No, wait, did I just say Food Fight? Oh, my God. Sorry, guys. I got that. See, that's how pervasive that movie is. It's stuck in my head. Monster Squad, excuse me. Monster Squad, which is actually a really great film, a little bit in the vein of Goonies, but it's about, like, the Universal Monsters and them getting together. It's actually a really cool film that I never saw before. I didn't even know it existed until Brock brought it up. So we sat down, we both watched that, and then we talked about it. And then, my choice was a film called Miracle Mile that I actually saw at one of those afternoon movies, which was the whole point of it. These are those movies that you would, maybe wouldn't see typically anywhere else, but back in the day, like in the 90s, you would turn on your television. I would turn on UPN, for instance. I know a little bit of a flashback, and some people might, what the fuck is a UPN? It was a really, really bad television network, and that was very popular for a very, very short amount of time. But it was very popular for, like, the fact that they would always play these afternoon movies. That's what I remembered anyway. And this is where I saw this particular film. It was called Miracle Mile, starring Anthony Edwards. And it was a very, very interesting film, kind of taking place during the Cold War. But it was, like, from just a regular guy's perspective. And it starts off very normal, low-key, and then it becomes something different. And I had much different memory of this as a child, and I was watching it again. Brock saw it too. I don't know if he really enjoyed it, but he definitely had his thoughts about it. I think there's some funny things about it, so guys, please check it out. Hopefully you enjoy it, and here we go, guys. This is the Stray Popcorn Afternoon Movie. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Stray Popcorn Afternoon Movie. And now, your feature presentation.
All right, guys, welcome to the Stray Popcorn Afternoon Movie. This part of the podcast is a new element that we wanted to introduce, where Brock and myself, we sit down, and each week we watch a film from the past, usually the 80s. The 80s is a pretty good era to pull from. But this week, we chose two films. That Brock proposed one, I proposed another. Usually it'll just be one, but since it's the introduction of this segment, we wanted to go ahead and hit two out of the park here, hopefully. Anyway, the first film that we wanted to talk about is a little gem from 1988, I believe. Or, wait, yeah, okay. It is called Monster Squad. This was Brock's pick. Tell us a little bit about this film, Brock.
So basically, Monster Squad, and I'm guessing from a Hollywood producer standpoint, that was created with two films being collided together, The Goonies and Ghostbusters. It's about a group of kids that grew up in this town, and the monsters from the Universal Monster films, like Frankenstein, Dracula, Wolfman, get loose in the city because of this amulet that they're after. The kids run into a scary German guy, and after they figure out everything's going on, they start busting. Is that the best way to put it?
Pretty much. Yep.
Okay.
This was my first time seeing the film. I had never even heard of it before. And when I started watching it, my first opinion, it wasn't my last opinion of the film, but it was kind of like, okay, the Kmart version of Goonies.
Oh, come on, it ain't that bad.
No, but it was, that's not really like a diss on it either, but it was just kind of like there were elements of it that definitely reminded me of Goonies, you know. Yeah. One of the things about the film that I found to be kind of interesting was, of course, the parents and the child relationship, which you actually mentioned to me before I was watching it, so I was kind of paying attention a little bit to it. So tell me a little bit about what you thought of the parents, and then I'll tell you.
I thought the parents were, like, narcissistic, first of all, because how are you not going to know your kids are out doing the shit that they're doing in this movie? Like,
yeah.
One kid is making freaking silver bullets.
Yeah, in shop
in
class.
In shop. Like, what teacher was off the side like, yep, guess he's making those silver bullets again?
One, they were in a shop class that had a smelter. Like, okay, you know, there was no supervision while the kid was using the smelter. The thing was is that the silver that he got, you know, to make these silver bullets came from the other kid's mom's silver drawer or whatever, you know, her silverware.
Which, when they show her, like, figuring out that, like, all the silverware is gone, it just shows her, like, oh, no big deal. So, is she, like, the Stepford Wives or some shit? Because, like, she did not give a shit. My mom would have been like, all right, you're going to be paying that back. You better go get a little job at the Burger King. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was really odd. Like, and probably the worst of the parents, too, of course, was
I don't remember any of the kids' names, so I'm gonna have to get a little help from you. But not that it really matters, I don't think. But the one central kid, the family that they kind of focus on in the film, the dad who's the cop, that guy is a freaking mess. I mean, the first thing that I saw him in, he's like, comes in, sits down, he's on his bed, pulls out a cigarette. His son is just there talking to him, and he's just like, yeah, kid, you know, I don't know. What did you think?
Shut up, kid, you stupid bastard. Get out of here.
Actually, my thought was is that this film may be like the prequel to The Breakfast Club. And this is Judd Nelson's, you know, this is his character as a kid before.
Yeah. Smoke him up, Johnny.
Smoke up, Johnny.
And then there's like the weird scene where it's like they're on the roof, like I guess the drive-in theater's behind the house, mm-hmm. and the dad comes out with like some burgers that look like he got them off the dollar menu. They weren't even good burgers. So he's like, fuck you, kid, you're not worth the $5. And then they watch a movie on there, and the dad's so on edge through the whole fucking movie, I thought he was just going to toss the kid off the side.
At any point, children
yeah,
will die.
Yeah, he's just going to be like, eat that burger.
Well, I mean, also the mom was really checked out, and there was that scene where the little girl is like going to bed and she's asking about her brother, like, are you gonna are you gonna yell at him or something? And she's like, and she's talking about her husband for some reason, like she actually mistook the fact that her kid wasn't talking about her brother but rather her father. And it was just like, how did that happen? Like, how did they connect that? That made no sense.
I guess that she was doing some opiates, yeah. Is my guess. She was just like, you know.
Well, if she doesn't
hey,
care about the
girl.
Silverware, she's just kind of like, oh, mommy is just going to go enjoy some more the marijuana, honey.
Mommy, I'm worried. Are you going to go stare at the wall for 4 hours? Mommy, why are you slurping macaroni and cheese through your nostrils?
Oh God, yeah.
Sorry,
I mean,
no. There's always that little girl in the movie that's just completely observant.
Mm-hmm. One trying to get into the boys' clubhouse, and there's no boys allowed. No, sorry. Well, honestly, if you look around that clubhouse, it's like, yeah, no boys allowed.
Right. And I mean, what do they do in the clubhouse? I mean, we used to play guns and stuff. I mean, they've got like Playboy magazines up there, and. And I mean, what are they up there circle jerking?
I know. They're up there, of all things, quizzing each other about monsters. That's how you yeah. become a member of the Monster Club. What I don't
And Nambla later on.
Right.
Sorry.
What I don't get about that one particular scene is why the cool kid from middle school is hanging around these elementary
right.
kids, especially since he's like a punk, you know? It's like, yeah, he's got the leather jacket on. You know, he seems to be kind of cool. He's really intimidating to all these other kids. For some reason, he wants to hang around these geeks. It just isn't fit.
But they do explain that in the movie, though. It's because of the guy's sister.
Oh, that's right. I'm totally forgetting about that. So he's into
Who,
his sister.
For 1980 standards, is pretty hot.
Right, and he's checking her out through the clubhouse window at one point. Okay.
So he was kind of, I guess, he was the Billy D. Williams of his generation.
Well,
you know
hello
saying?
There. Like, what do we yeah. have here?
Don't mind this tiger rug. But, I mean, you know, the most endearing sweet part of the movie to me is when the little girl is, you know, she's being, how you say, hand-hugged in the air by Count Dracula, and he just lets out this, you little bitch.
I know. Well, actually, there's a better setup to that. He slowly walks up to the girl as she's reading out this incantation to send all the monsters back to wherever. And to hell, I guess. I don't know. But
right.
she's reading this incantation, and of course, the guy who's teaching her, because she's like 5, she doesn't know how to read, let alone she doesn't know how to read, you know, German. He's like telling her what to say. Doesn't get it out enough time, and Dracula ends up going up to her, and then, yeah, ends up grabbing her, and he holds her really close, and then he just goes, shut up, you little bitch. And it's just like,
yeah.
what?
Yeah, I mean, and this movie was written by Shane Black. And for those of you that don't know who Shane Black is, I just feel sorry for you. But he made some of the greatest action films of the 80s. He made Lethal Weapon. He made The Last Boy Scout. And then he did a great film recent called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is probably one of my favorite film noir films ever made.
Yeah.
And then he is now known in every household as the guy that took over for Jon Favreau in Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this guy is the guy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's a pretty well-known screenwriter and a great director. So yeah, his sense of humor is in this film, and with that little girl, that's a prime example of something Shane Black would do. I mean, he's a dark humorist, so
which I enjoyed. Really works. I'm just thinking, like, there's no way they would ever let that happen now. Like, you're never gonna see that again. That moment is gone. I mean, unless things get really dark, we're never gonna see Dracula or any other villainous character pick up a little girl and call her a bitch. Which is like, that was like the stunning thing about this film to me, was that scene. And we were joking about it a couple of days ago. But anyway, there's so much going on. All the adults are useless, you know, beyond the parents. Like, cops are showing up, trying to put these monsters down. None of them are effective. They like come up to them and literally are like, hey, what are you doing here? Standing in front of them, just getting like hit easily, and they're down. And the kids are the ones like pulling out guns and shooting the monsters dead. It's amazing.
And don't forget, one kid kicks Wolfman in the nards.
Yeah.
Wolfman's got nards, you know? You know what my girlfriend actually calls this movie? She didn't grow up with this film, so it's not a big deal for her. But when I started watching it, she calls it that cute kid movie where Dracula calls the little girl a bitch.
Dracula say what?
It is kind of weird, man. Like,
but it's amazing at the same time. It really is an endearing, which is why it was like, okay, maybe this isn't the Kmart brand Goonies. You know, this is a really good film, and it was really enjoyable to watch. So, do you have any other thoughts about the film? Or,
well, I mean, Frankenstein is basically Sloth in the film. I mean,
pretty much.
To your defense of the Kmart Goonies, but I mean, it is a good film. It's definitely a relic of its time,
mm-hmm.
but it's kind of ahead of its time too because of Shane Black's writing.
Yeah,
he tends to take what would usually be a boring kids' film and made it as exciting as what adults would get watching Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a really great film. Definitely love the Frankenstein montage scene, you know, with the classic 80s music. Actually, I didn't recognize that song.
The future's so bright.
Yeah, yeah.
You gotta wear shades.
Was that the song that they played during that scene?
I thought it was. Is it not?
I'm not entirely positive. Actually, I don't think so. I think it's another song. It is some other song that's kind of in that vibe, though. But that would be the Kmart version of that song. You know, like,
it
was clearly there. Probably the worst song, though. I told you about this already, but the end credit song, the Monster Squad rap, I'd put that right up there with the Turner and Hooch Tom Hanks rap.
I can top that.
Yeah. Well,
the song's performed by the Monster Squad.
So the kids are the ones performing that song?
I guess it's the name of the group they put together for the movie.
Oh, Lord.
The Monster Squad. Oh, and the song that we were talking about is Rock Until You Drop by Michael Cimbello.
Yes.
I had it completely wrong. But yeah, you're right. It's in the same vein. That's why it's easy to get mixed up.
Rock Until You Drop.
Rock Until You Drop.
That's the scene where, of course, yeah.
Rock until you. I don't. Frankenstein's in the movie.
Yeah. And they're making it very clear in this scene that Frankenstein, who had direct orders to go and kill the children if they got in the way, because somehow these children, well, because the children, of course, have this book. They have a Van Helsing's diary, and that's what Dracula wants back so that he can complete this. I don't know, merger back into this world or take it over or whatever. And so the kids have it because, of course, like somehow the dad ends up with it. The way the kid like deciphers too that this entire thing is orchestrated by Dracula, because of the, you know, was it Value Car or whatever, or something, I don't remember the name, but he's like writing down on the tablet, like, this name is interesting. I wonder if it spells something else.
Yeah. Well, the guy that directed this movie is a guy named Fred Decker. Mm-hmm. Might not be familiar to a lot of our audience, but he has had his hands in some cult classics. He did Night of the Creeps. Mm. He directed that. He also directed the forever awful RoboCop 3, and he did the screenplay with Frank Miller. He did House and House 2. He wrote those. He wrote a lot of episodes of Tales from the Crypt. Mm. And also, If Looks Could Kill, he wrote that. I don't know if you ever saw that. If not, we should probably do some commentary for that, because that's one of the worst films I've ever seen in my life.
That'll probably be one of the next ones, I think, because I've never seen that. So
It's Richard Grieco from 21 Jump Street playing a L.A. Gear-wearing James Bond guy. It's a story of a foreign trip from school gone wrong.
You know, we should do a film where all of the characters at some point rock L.A. gear attire.
Yeah.
Just do a whole slew of films that are all like, this is the continuing part of our L.A. gear series.
And we should do a drinking game to Kids Incorporated where every time they say awesome, rad, or gnarly, we have to take a drink.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, God. That's awesome. So this film is actually really good. I strongly recommend it for my first time viewing it. I'll have to watch it again, too, because I was kind of fading in and out, too. I was like kept falling asleep, unfortunately. It had nothing to do with the film. Just really tired when I was watching it. But it is a really, really good film. I really enjoyed it. If you're a fan of Goonies or Ghostbusters, well, here's the marriage of those two things. So,
yeah, yeah. And I hope at some point we'll do the commentary for it. We'll have to see. But
yeah, absolutely.
And so with that said, I got asked to watch a movie called Miracle Mile starring Anthony Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
And had no idea about this film before Elle told me about it. And still don't know how to feel about that.
Well, let me give you a quick synopsis about this film. So this film stars Anthony Edwards. Don't ask me what the character names are. I never remember. But he pretty much plays this musician who's in town playing for a gig. He's a musician. And he ends up meeting a girl very awkwardly. There's this crazy ass scene at the beginning of this film where they're inside the Los Angeles County Museum looking at the evolution exhibits and everything like that. But anyway, the story kind of follows along this guy as he meets this woman for one day. He's about to leave town and wants to spend one more time with her, which we'll talk about in a moment. So he's going to spend one more time with her before he has to leave. He's supposed to meet her when she gets off of her shift at a coffee shop after midnight. He oversleeps, ends up going there, makes a phone call, and later another phone call comes through. And that's when the entire plot of this film begins to unfold. And there are other things going on. I'm going to stop there and we'll just talk about it and we'll kind of get to like what this film is all about. So anyway, tell me, what are your initial impressions of this film?
Okay, so I'm just going to start from the beginning and try to work my way to the end.
Yeah.
Okay, so the movie opens. They're in a museum.
Of course.
He's wearing a blue jacket straight out of a Billy Ocean video.
Mm-hmm.
And he's playing with kids, in any other film, I'd be like, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes adults play with kids.
But these aren't just kids. These are kids on a school field trip.
Right.
Actually, it's crazy. When I was a kid, my school went on a field trip to this exact same museum for an Egyptian exhibit that they had at the time. But I can tell you right now, if we had ever encountered this type of character walking around, he would have been arrested for, like, pedophilia.
Yeah, I mean, it's really bizarre. He's, like, jumping out at the kids, like... Mm-hmm.
Talking to them about all different things, yeah.
Yeah, it's real, like, where's the white van, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of weird to watch.
He's doing all of this to impress. How did you describe this girl?
It's really foul, so if you're easily offended, turn off your headphones now. But it looked like she was the type of girl that would bite your dick off.
when he told me that, I lost it. I think I laughed so hard. I almost just like passed out just because my brain at that point just was like an overdrive. But yeah, she's got this hideous, atrocious haircut, which is like a flat top. Essentially, she has like a mullet, right?
Like, oh, it's awful. It looks like she has shaved her hair on top.
Yeah.
But somehow it wasn't even like a natural mullet. It was like it came off the edge of the bottom of her hair.
Mm-hmm.
And then she has this weird like spiky thing going on in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And then she wears these outfits that like people in the 80s had to be like, "Oh, girl."
It is the ugliest outfit that I have ever seen on film in my life. It is horrendous beyond belief. And this film was like 1987. So we're actually out of the early 80s and we're into like the late 80s where, you know, hairstyles were still kind of like big, you know, kind of bouffant, you know, lots of hairspray. But this was just like, I don't even recognize this from any era. This looks like a serial killer. And I was wondering, like, what film did she do before this? You know, like
Breakfast Club.
She was in Breakfast Club?
Yep.
Okay, as what? I'm like totally missing that.
No, not Breakfast Club. Sorry, St. Elmo's Fire.
Oh, okay. Did she have that type of hair in that film?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
So this was, I wonder if this was her choice or the production's choice. Like,
either way,
I don't get this. Like, okay, it's no criticism against this actress, all right? I really don't remember what she looks like in St. Elmo's Fire at all. But anyway, I'm thinking, like, why would Anthony Edwards' character, for whatever reason, be so unbelievably attracted to this woman? Like, think she's a goddess when, I don't know, like, as you said, she does look like she's going to go bite off a very private member of your body if she's given the opportunity. But yeah, so they're going around the museum. They're looking at different things, and he's trying to get her attention by talking to these kids and joking around with them. And he's straight up stalking her. And yeah. Finally, they're in the gift shop. She walks away, and he just doesn't pursue her. And he's like, "Oh, I'm really a failure. I really let that one slip through my fingers." I'm like thinking, good riddance, you know?
Yeah. And then he like hooks up with her, meets her dad. Like the whole thing's really fast.
Oh, and this is all happening within one day.
Yeah. And then the weirdest part is, and maybe it's just my perverted brain going wild, but was when her dad's like, "I'm going to get us some tube steaks."
Yeah.
And he like gets really excited about the tube steaks. He's like,
"Hey, do you want a tube steak, girl?" "Oh, no, I'm fine." "You want one, young man?" "Yeah, I'll have a tube steak. That sounds delicious."
Who calls it a tube steak? And then he walks away, and he's like, "Where's your dad with those tube steaks?"
He's like, "Hey, aren't we gonna eat the tube steak?"
So I think he might have been a little confused.
Mm-hmm. There was some like weird contrived plot line there too. Like, I guess this was her grandfather and grandmother, or was it her uncle and her aunt, or something like that.
I don't know.
They're family, and these two used to be married, and they've been separated for a long time. They still live very close to each other, but they haven't talked in a long time. Like, I guess they just had a falling out or whatever. So this woman that Anthony Edwards has a crush on, she's living there with her aunt. And anyway, he ends up walking her to work at some point, you know, and they're talking about, like, he wants to spend one more time with her before he has to leave out of town the following day. And the only time she's going to be available is, of course, after midnight. And that's when the line comes up in the film. Do you want to say it?
No, you go ahead.
Okay. That's when she's like, "Yeah, meet me after midnight. I'm going to screw your eyes blue."
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, such a romantic. That is just lovely.
This movie has some of the worst dialogue I've ever heard in my life. Like, none of it makes any sense
when
these people talk. So basically what happens is he goes to meet her. He oversleeps because his alarm didn't go off. So he goes to meet her.
Mm-hmm.
He goes in and is hoping she'd still be there. What was it, 4 hours later?
Yeah.
Like, what is this dude on? So he walks into this cafe to meet her. She's not there. He talks to the waitress into hooking him up with the phone number. But this phone booth keeps ringing outside.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally goes. He answers it. and it's this guy on the other end who's telling him basically that there's a nuclear bomb coming, and that you know, it's gonna be there in like what, 71 minutes is what they said.
Well, then
he gets gunned down.
Well, the reason that he called was he was actually trying to reach his father. And he called the 323 number instead of 714, which is Orange County. And I know because I've lived in both of those places. But anyway, so he calls the wrong area code and he's saying, like, I'm in North Dakota and, you know, we fired, you know, whatever. And he's freaking out, flipping out. And he realizes he called the wrong number at one point after Anthony Edwards starts talking to him. Because he just gets, once the phone, you know, once that gets picked up, he just starts spilling his guts. You know, like, without asking, like, Dad, is that you? You know, nothing like that. So, yeah. And then, of course, as you already said, the guy gets gunned down. Anthony Edwards is basically kind of, like, stunned by this, what's just happened. Like, he doesn't know if it's, like, is this, you know, a joke? Or is this real? Like, he doesn't know what to believe. But he's really terrified, you know. And he ends up going back into the cafe. And, you know, he ends up telling a few people about what's happened on the phone and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, okay, so that actually, that part for me is one of the best parts of the film. You know, like him answering the phone, getting this information, like the reaction from that. Like, you know that there's 71 minutes left, you know. Like, how do you feel about that? Like, what's your reaction? And that part is good. And I'm like, oh, wow, there's actually a premise here for a really good film. That's not what happens, though. He goes back into the cafe, and you want to tell him what happens next?
Okay, this is when the movie takes, like, I'll call it David Lynch light, like, because that's what it feels like. He walks in, he's freaking out. There's a girl played by Denise Crosby sitting at the table, and then there's these, like, two guys, and then this older guy talking to a drag queen.
Mm-hmm. Well, not a drag queen, a transvestite, definitely. A
transvestite,
yeah.
Sorry. And so, the Denise Crosby character somehow has connections to, like, the FBI, the CIA.
The military.
gay helicopter drivers.
Oh God!
What the fuck did I watch, L? Well, like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh wow, I don't know if I hate this movie or if I just really love it because it's so fucking insane.
You know, it's hard to put your finger on it. It was something I saw when I was 12 years old, never forgot it. I'd seen it, I think, again when I was 16 or 17 years later, but I hadn't seen it in that time since. So I watched it again recently, too, and I'm like, oh, my God, this film is off the walls. You pretty much summed it up when we talked a little bit about it before we started recording. Like, someone was definitely enjoying their nose candy when they were writing this movie.
I mean, it's insane. There's like and I might even go through the whole film, man, because there's just so many awesome, like, random shit in this film. Like, you really have to go watch it. I don't think I could fulfill its greatness over the microphone.
Well, Bubba from Forrest Gump shows up at one point. You pointed that out. And there's craziness happening everywhere. Because once these people finally come to grips and accept the fact that the end of the world is coming, because basically Denise Crosby's character, she pretty much confirms it. You know, like all the major leaders, they have gone up to the highest north point or the southern point or something like that. You know, which is out of the fallout zone or whatever. And, you know, so everyone's freaking out. The guy who is the restaurant owner is actually the same guy who's in RoboCop, who plays the captain in the original films. But he, like, jumps on the counter at one point with a pistol and puts it to Anthony Edwards' head, like, are you fucking around with me? Tell me the truth.
And what's up with the stewardess practicing her stewardess moves?
She's
not
even a stewardess. Like, she borrowed her sister's uniform for some reason.
It's so weird.
I saw him talking out on the phone, and he was really scared.
Yeah.
They were just, like, confirming this point. So the entire cafe scene is pretty much to establish the fact that, hey, all this shit, it's probably true. So the rest of the film, okay, so because of this girl, you know, all the rest of these people, they jump into a truck and they hightail it out of town. they're headed toward the airport. You know, this Denise Crosby's character, she has connections, she has money, so she's chartering planes, she's calling in favors. So they're all hightailing it either to a heliport or the airport. And anyway, pretty much the entire film is about this like horrible adventure about Anthony Edwards' character trying to get across town to go pick up this girl that he's met once and save her. And it is just, the film is a mess. It really is. It is just beyond belief bad in so many ways.
Yeah, I mean, the explain the gay air helicopter part. So he goes, like, the helicopter's coming or whatever, and he's got to find a pilot really quick. So for whatever reason, he figures that going to the fitness club is a great place to find a fucking pilot.
Yeah.
And he's running around like a madman.
Are you a pilot? Are you a helicopter pilot? Yeah. Are you an helicopter pilot?
And there's even like a scene where he runs into this like one workout room where these people are like doing, you know, just regular exercise outside of, you know, the machines. And it looks straight up like a Lionel Richie video. You know what I'm saying? Like the cinematography and everything. Mm-hmm. And then he comes out on the other side of this room and there just happens to be a guy that's a helicopter pilot.
Working out, building on his biceps.
And he's like, I can help you fly the helicopter. Mm-hmm. And then, the next thing you know, this butch dude is walking off holding hands with the most feminine man I've ever seen in my life.
No, and he first looks at Anthony Edwards' character. He's like, you got a problem with it? Because he's like, even before that, he's like, but there's someone I have to take with me. And Anthony Edwards is like, no, there's no time. There's no time. If they don't go, I don't go. And then he's like, hey, babe. He goes into another room, says that, and then, of course, this person you've just described walks out. Old Dan just gives him this look like, you got a problem with it? And he's like, no, no. And they're just walking off. It has no, like, this film, like, seems like it goes out of the way to identify, like, hey, we've added gay people and transgender people to this film. Right on, America. You know? And it's just, it's so bizarre. Like, it doesn't need to be there, but for whatever reason, the writer, the director, someone was like, yeah, let's incorporate this guy. And I remember this actor, too, the guy who plays the helicopter pilot. Like, he's been in a lot of stuff, but he always kind of plays, like, the intimidator. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what he's... I don't remember the roles or anything like that, but I do remember him. Anyway, so what happens from there? I'm even losing track now. Basically, they go back to the helicopter. You know, he has the girl. He did finally go get the girl. And she's like, her reaction to this entire thing is beyond bizarre. Do you remember any of that?
Yeah, kind of. Some like, of it's kind of a blur.
Well, he goes back to her apartment, and her grandmother or her aunt is there. And, you know, he basically Anthony Edwards tells her about what's happening and that, you know, nuclear bombs are being dropped on LA in just a few, like, you know, like 30 minutes or something like that. So, of course, she's like, you know, she lets this stranger go in, pick up her niece or her granddaughter, and she doesn't wake up for the longest time. Like, she's just out for whatever reason. So Anthony Edwards is carrying her around for a little while. And so the aunt ends up calling the uncle or whoever, I don't know, you know, that had been estranged with because they made a promise that they wouldn't talk to each other until, like, the day they died or whatever. And so they end up kind of having, like, this, like, hey, you two kids, get on, and we'll go find the car keys, and we'll meet up with you. So anyway, they end up, like, Anthony Edwards ends up putting her in a shopping cart and is running her across town to the helicopter pad. Eventually, the aunt and uncle do show up with the car right as they get to the building where the helicopter pad is. So kind of defeating the purpose of using the car. And they're like, nah, we're not going to spend any time with you. We're going to end up going to our favorite cafe and spend our last moments together or whatever. It's the most bizarre scene. Around this time, this girl, this love interest, ends up finally waking up. Totally clueless to the fact, like, she totally seems okay with the fact that she's being... that she just wakes up in a shopping cart with this relative stranger that she just met, like running her across town in the middle of the night. Doesn't really ask for any explanation. She just assumes it's like some romantic gesture or something like that. It's so bizarre and unnecessary. Like, it's the weirdest thing. But anyway, this film ultimately climaxes to this point where, you know, Brock actually asked me, is this all a dream? I'm like, hell no. They don't take that out. But basically at the end, the bombs do drop on LA, you know? So any thoughts about that or anything?
Yeah, I mean, it was a real downer ending. I mean, the movie's not terrible. There's some really cool camera shots through the movie. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, it was actually supposed to be the premise for Twilight Zone, the movie, in the 80s. And
really?
They wanted to tinker with the end, and that's when the writer-director backed out of doing it because he didn't want the ending to be changed. Mm-hmm. So I found that kind of interesting. It would have actually made a good Twilight Zone movie, honestly.
Absolutely, because now that you mention it, it totally does sound like a Twilight Zone episode. But so they end up getting in the helicopter with this pilot. Like, they end up getting picked up in the fly out of L.A. as you see the nuclear warheads flying overhead. One passes them, is going down to Mexico, and then there are three more coming right into L.A. And as they see those coming, the plane is still struck by the shockwave. It goes down, and of course, the plane falls down into the La Brea tar pits.
Yep.
The last scene of the film is them sinking into the tar pits, and Anthony Edwards is like, "Oh, don't worry, someone will find us in 100,000 years."
Yeah, I don't. It was the most bizarre movie I've seen in a while.
Yep. Thanks, 80s.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, but you know, I could see some styles that came out of that, like David Fincher.
Mm-hmm.
I could see a heavy MV influence on him. I don't know if it was, but there was a lot of stuff that reminded me of like David Fincher films.
Yeah. I think there was a great premise there, you know, like if you just take out the main elements, minus the terrible overacting or underacting or whatever the hell that was throughout the film, there are actually some like really interesting ideas. You know, like I said,
right,
the idea of, you know, the end of the world is coming. What the hell do you do? You know, where do you run? Where do you hide? And I've seen a few films even since try to explore that. Like years ago in the 90s, even there's a film that I'm remembering where it was about like, what if all the electricity just turned out? And it was a film about people trying to get to the desert for some reason. You know, so there have been films that kind of have followed this format. Sad to say, I think this is the one that's kind of done it best. I may be mistaken, but that's what I know of so far. But this is something that I would actually like to remake one day, like actually do a solid story, you know, with like the actors. Well, Anthony Edwards is a great actor, actually, so no complaints against him, but you know, it was such a weird and bizarre film overall, like an acid trip kind of film, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that pretty much is Miracle Mile. I think that came out in 87. So, guys, the two films that we mentioned again are Monster Squad and Miracle Mile. If you still feel like you need to watch, well, definitely Monster Squad. I think you should definitely watch it. And if you're in the right frame of mind and you're looking for something just really bizarre, Miracle Mile, I think, would definitely be right up there for you as well. So, yeah, I think that concludes our afternoon movies.
It does. Yeah. Yes.
All right, guys, that is it for this episode of Stray Popcorn. Please follow, like, subscribe to us on Twitter and Facebook. We are at Stray Popcorn, StrayPopCorn. Like how I can spell? I do. Anyway, guys, please also follow our personal pages, which we don't really promote enough here on this podcast. If you're not following Brock already, which is unlikely because I think a lot of you actually are listening or following him, and you should be. But anyway, Brock Vincent Sharp, that is at Facebook, and it's spelled B-R-O-C-K. VinciOnSharp. You can find him there on Facebook, and I believe it's the same address on Twitter. If you can't find him on Twitter with that address, just type in Brockmanson Sharp into the search bar. It should take you directly to him. Not many people with that name, I don't believe. And also, you can follow my personal stuff as well. I am at L Nichols, ELENICHOLS on the Facebooks and the Twitters. And also, my website is ELENICHOLS.com, LNichols.com, where you can find a variety of different stuff as well, including a lot of the artwork that I've been working on and a lot of other stuff I don't talk about much on this podcast. But if you want to check it out, it's available there for you to see. Just to let you guys know, we are on Stitcher as well, Stray Popcorn. You can do a search for us there, and it should take you to our feed if you want to listen to us there. I just forgot to mention that, and I've forgotten to mention that, like, for the last few episodes, in fact. So just wanted to get that plug in there. Lastly, we are working on a brand new t-shirt. Not a brand new one. The first one, in fact, for Stray Popcorn. Since I am an artist, figured I'd actually put my hands to use and try to put together something kind of cool. Not just something with our logo, but something with actually a little bit of an artistic coolness to it. So guys, I'm playing around with that right now. We should have something actually pretty shortly, maybe the next couple of weeks. So if you want to show your love for the podcast and help support us and keep this online and help us pay for some bandwidth and server space, that would be great, guys. We will have those available to you shortly. So that you guys can check them out and see if you want to buy one. I don't know. Maybe you want to buy one. I don't know. Anyway, guys, that is it for this episode. And guys, as always, keep popping. Goodbye, everyone.
Protection, whoa, 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 whoa. On this day, everyone comes to play. Black flies.